From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie and welcome to Coast AM. I do hope you had a restful holiday. And this hour, a special reading of A Soldier Died Today in an interview with its 82-year-old author. And then open lines this hour at the half. And next hour, a most remarkable person joins us with some incredible stories later on. But first, you might want to be careful as you chug down that can of soda. A common preservative found in most soft drinks may cause serious damage to cells, according to a report in Britain's The Independent. Sodium benzoate has the ability, they say, to switch off vital parts of a person's DNA. Now, this is according to research from a British university. They say the problem is usually associated with aging and alcohol abuse, but new findings show that drinking soda with this preservative can eventually lead to cirrhosis of the liver, and you only get one of those, and degenerative diseases such as Parkinson's. We'll check into this story because it could be a big one. For nearly a decade, Dr. Jack Kevorkian waged a defiant campaign to help other people kill themselves. The retired pathologist left bodies at hospital emergency rooms and motels and videotaped a death that was broadcast on CBS's 60 Minutes. His actions prompted battles over assisted suicide in many states. But as he prepares now to leave prison on June 1st, this Friday, after serving more than 8 years of a 10 to 25-year sentence in the death of a Michigan man, Kevorkian will find that there's still only one state that has a law allowing physician-assisted suicide. That's in Oregon. We have put in a request to talk with Dr. Jack. They call him Dr. Death, as a matter of fact, and we'll see if he joins us on the program. In New Orleans, the body of New England Patriots player Marquise Hill was found Monday, a day after he was reported missing following a jet ski accident on Lake Pontchartrain. Hill's body was discovered by searchers about a quarter of a mile from where the former LSU star and a female companion were involved in the accident. She is okay. In Baghdad, the United States ambassador there said he and his Iranian counterpart have agreed broadly on policy toward Iraq during their four-hour groundbreaking talks on Monday, but insisted that Iran end its support for militants during a meeting that U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker described as businesslike. The American said Iran proposed setting up a trilateral security mechanism that would include the U.S., Iraq, and Iran. Crocker said the proposal would need study in Washington. In Venezuela, Venezuela's oldest private television station was simply pushed off the air as President Hugo Chavez's government replaced the popular opposition-aligned network on Monday with a new state-funded channel. Radio Caracas Television shut down just before midnight Sunday as his broadcast license expired. Chavez refused to renew its license, accusing the channel of subversive activities. The new channel launched its transmissions with artists singing pro-Chavez music, then carried an exercise program and a talk show interspersed with government ads proclaiming now Venezuela belongs to everyone. Crowds of students, by the way, took to the streets in Caracas to protest the move on Monday, saying they fear for the future there of free speech. Get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at the feature article, an incredible picture from Mars. Black spots have been discovered on Mars that are so dark that nothing inside can be seen. Quite possibly, the spots are entrances to deep underground caves capable of protecting Martian life were it to exist. On the line with us now is the head of the EnterpriseMission.com and our science advisor, Richard C. Hoagland, who's been trying to peek into this cave. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Good evening, George. Well, you know what I said, sent to you in an email, right?
Yep.
That this is the 19.5 hole of a Martian golf course?
It is incredible, isn't it?
These actually are not new, although this image is new. This is a super high-resolution, high-rise image with inches resolution per pixel taken of one of the objects. There are actually seven of this set that have been known for a couple, 3 years that were imaged by the Mars Odyssey spacecraft. And what's really interesting is that we know these things are deep and empty, cavernous, because the Odyssey spacecraft has an infrared camera, the Themis camera. And if you look at the paper that these scientists published a few weeks ago, you can actually see some of their infrared shots, and the dark holes in visible light are bright white from radiated infrared light. These things, whatever they are, they're warm, and they're warmer than the surface at night, and they're radiating heat up through the hole into space, and the NASA spacecraft is picking it up in orbit.
Well, this hole that we've got on the coasttocoastam.com website, apparently the hole is the size of a football field. So it's
about 300 feet across.
Yeah, but how deep? Give me a guess.
Well, we don't know. What they hoped to do after the Odyssey observations in 2004 is to take these close-up visual images with the high-rise camera on Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and see the bottom, and they can't. So they're obviously deeper, and they're looking straight down, and the sun is pretty high, so they've got to be hundreds, if not thousands, of feet deep. Now, do you have the image up on your screen?
Yeah, it's up. It's not on the screen, but it's up on the coasttocoastam.com website.
If you were able to go to the screen and look really closely, there's something really weird about this image. You will see everyone going to your computers now, rushing to make sure that George does not get in. You will see there is this incredible geometric patterning all over the image, George. Little rectangle after rectangle after rectangle arrayed in an up to the left and down to the right array, almost like a crossword puzzle, crosshairs. And this feature is right in the middle. So in the model that this is, we're looking at the geometry of an ancient buried city, which is where you get that kind of geometry.
That's a pretty interesting hypothesis, Richard.
Then the K would be a collapse to underground stories or basements or whatever underneath. I mean, think New York City. As much of New York City is below ground as it is above ground, right?
Yep.
And so if you buried the skyscrapers and you had a collapse and you were looking down from orbit between the buildings peeking up through the mud, you would see what we're seeing. And again, go and look carefully at the untouched NASA raw image. We haven't had a thing to do with this. There is geometry all over that picture, and it should not be there.
All right, Richard, I'm looking forward to you posting some info on this on the EnterpriseMission.com website.
This, among many other things.
All right, thanks, Richard. It's Richard C. Hoagland. Boy, this hole would make Mel Waters, if you remember the old art interviews with him on Mel's Hole. This is a monster hole. Also on the coasttocoastam.com website, under listeners' emails, take a look at the video supplied to us, the link from listener Mark P. It is of that strange-looking object that Chad had sent us several weeks ago. And this is apparently a computer-generated mock-up of how this strange object might move in flight. It's kind of neat, so just go take a look at that. In Castleberry, Florida, police say they're sure they shot a 4-foot-long, 80-pound monitor lizard that had been lurking in an Orlando suburb for months. Neighbors aren't ready yet to let their children or pets loose because they want to see the body of this critter. The police that shot this lizard didn't catch it. It scrambled off into a retention pond. Now, if you're an avid golfer, hitting one hole-in-one in your career is staggering. Two, unbelievable. How about more than 10? That's exactly the case with a California woman. We'll be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we're going to take some time to talk with an incredible person because this is a very strange story. Jacqueline Gagne, she golfs and she lives in Southern California, way Southern California. And I've got with me now John Ziegler, who hosts his own show on our affiliate here in Los Angeles, KFI. John is also an avid golfer, and he's going to be with us for this interview. Hi, John.
George, good to see you again.
You too. Jackie, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Good. Now, this story came to us because John was talking to me a week ago and said, George, this is incredible. This woman who's been on my show has more holes in one in her career than most people get in the afterlife. And so I wanted to bring John in to talk with you too, Jackie. Tell us a little bit. How many holes in one do you have to date?
Since January 23rd, I have 15. Since 05, I have 20.
Now, John's laughing because how many have you had, John?
I've been playing golf for 27 years. I'm about a 2-handicap golfer, and I play an awful lot. And I've had 5 in my life. As a point of comparison, Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer the game has ever seen, has been on the professional tour for a little over 10 years. He's played in about 1,000 professional rounds of golf. To my recollection, and I'm the world's foremost expert on Tiger Woods,
right.
TigerWoodsIsGod.com, and I'm the pastor of the First Church of Tiger Woods, I believe he has had 2 holes in one in his professional career. I'm sure he's had many others in practice and as an amateur. But this is, there's bizarre, there's beyond bizarre, and then there's this. This is beyond impossible. George, I'm a huge fan of your show. You do a lot of incredible stories. This one is as incredible as it gets, but I actually believe Jackie. I've had her on my show on KFI in Los Angeles, and I have no reason not to believe her, even though part of my brain is going, this is impossible.
Jackie, you've had witnesses, right?
Yes, all of them have been attested to.
We're going to talk with
by our head pro also at Mission Hills Country Club.
And also, hasn't one been captured on videotape?
Yes, by ABC, yes.
Jackie, can I ask you about the videotaped one?
Yeah.
Who decided to do the story on you, and how many holes were they following you before they captured you making a hole-in-one?
No, that's not an official hole-in-one. Let's get that straight.
Well, what's an official one? What is it?
You have to play 18 rounds for it to be an official.
18 holes.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. For it to be official, but are you counting that in your 20?
No.
You're not counting that?
No.
Wait a minute. The one that got captured on video that's on the internet right now, you're not counting in the 15 that you've made this year.
No, that's correct.
All right, well, just for the curiosity's sake, though, how many holes were you playing when they were following you because of, obviously, the hysteria that all your holes in one have created? How many holes did they follow you before you made one for them that was unofficial?
That was the first one.
No!
Yes, that
that's
was
impossible!
Third.
Now, the odds.
That's impossible!
John, when you first gave me this story, she had about 8. And they said the odds were just under 114 million billion
right
to one.
And there are only 6 billion people on the planet. And that was 7 holes in one ago. And she's not even counting the one that goes caught on tape.
Calm down, John.
This is impossible.
Calm down. You're so excited.
This is impossible.
Jackie, how do you do this? Is this magic? Is it luck? Do you have the ability of telekinesis? Are you mind pushing the golf ball into the hole?
I wish. I'd have more than what I have. No.
Oh, she's getting greedy now.
No, actually, you can ask anyone who plays with me. You can ask our head pro, like I said, at Mission Hills Country Club. I just have a really good aim. I'm right at the stick all the time.
Jackie, that doesn't explain it.
This is
it.
A true story.
Wait, hold on a second. Wait a minute. We need to fully examine how absurd this
is. Well, we got to find out, though, how many, official or unofficial, how many holes in one have you had in your lifetime, and you've only been playing since 2003?
I've had 20.
And she doesn't even count a couple. She doesn't count the one on tape, and you don't count.
Oh, no, these she's counting.
And you
this is 20 total.
No. Jackie, you're only counting 20 in which you've played 18 holes in that particular round, correct?
Correct. I'm counting 20 official rounds.
Well, how many unofficial?
You can add 4 more to that.
That's ridiculous.
No, that's like going
24
past.
Then. 24.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Now, are we talking about putt-putt golf or the real thing, folks?
Putt-putt golf. No.
I'm kidding you.
No, I saw the yardages, George. These were all over 100 yards. Tell George about number 10 for this year, which got that was when you started to get a ton of publicity. You actually thought you lost a ball and turned out you made a hole in one.
Correct.
tell George about that.
That was at the Palms Country Club out here in La Quinta, and I was a guest, and we were playing golf, and the palm tree was about 3 feet off the green, and the ball hit the palm tree and went in the cup.
Now, you've got one of the witnesses next to you right now, Dr. Barbara Creedman.
Correct.
Get Barbara on the phone for just a second, Jackie, and then we'll come back and talk with you
again. Okay, now she wasn't there for the palm tree.
Okay, that's okay. John, you got to talk with this witness because this is staggering. I mean, if she were all by herself and she came on the program and said, I've got 24 of these, You probably wouldn't believe her, right?
No. No, this is impossible. This is absolutely impossible. Statistically, this is there's impossible, and then there's this realm. It,
on this program, there's something more than a good shot. Now, Dr. Barbara, are you there?
I am.
All right, this is Dr. Barbara Creedman, and you've witnessed how many? One, two?
Three, four.
All right.
You've lost count.
All right, now tell us, when you're watching Jackie set up to tee off, tell us what happened. Give us an example of one of her hole-in-one shots.
Well, the first thing she does is fall to the ground and pray, and then she gets back up and tees the ball up.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by?
Kidding, you, George.
Okay. I thought it was on the way. I thought I had the
story. You thought it was divine intervention.
Yes, I thought I had it.
Well, that's how Tiger Woods does it.
You can. I tell people that you can see it in her stature. She has so much confidence when she approaches a par three, and she just walks up to the tee box. I mean, she just has that. I'm going to get another one.
See, John, this is a hole in one is perfection, right?
Right.
Who's to say that she doesn't have
because
the perfect swing?
No, I've seen her swing. It's very nice. It's nowhere near perfect. she's a good golfer, but she's not that great. I mean, she's only been playing for 4.5 years. This is statistically the most bizarre, insane, impossible stat in the history of just sport, of humanity.
All right, but you just said the key word, impossible, yet you believe it.
I do believe her because I can't imagine how she could pull off this kind of perpetrate this kind of a hoax, especially considering the amount of attention she's been getting for the last 8 or 9 holes in one.
She's Chris Angel.
Whatever she is, she ought to bottle it and sell it.
Oh, my God. So, Barbara, I mean, you've got to be astounded when you watch this.
Well, even watching her play without getting the hole in one, she's an incredible golfer, and she's getting more and more accurate because I play a lot with her. And, she's just a dynamite golfer.
This is amazing. Okay, Barbara, go put Jackie back on.
And we need to find out from Jackie what Jackie's bar bill has been, because there's been, you know, there's a tradition that when you make a hole-in-one, you pay for drinks
for
everybody who's at the club that day.
All right.
So what has Jackie's bar bill been through all this?
Are you buying rounds for everybody, Jackie, after these holes-in-one?
Yes, I am. Dom Perignon. A couple of thousand at least already.
How much does it cost you? A couple thousand bucks?
Thousands.
$250 a bottle.
And I got to ask,
times 20.
In all seriousness, is it getting old yet?
I mean, yeah, it's getting a little weary, a little draining.
Are these all par threes that you do this?
Yes.
Okay.
And at what point did you start to think something weird was happening? At what number?
Probably number 5.
And that was 10 holes in one ago. And it's important to note this is all happening in 4 months.
I know. That makes it even crazy.
4 months, 15 holes in one.
Do you believe that there's something psychic or paranormal going on here?
No.
We have to say that. It's my show, Coast to Coast.
Come on.
Come on, give me a break.
Jackie, get with the program. You are going to be on, speaking of programs, you're going to be on David Letterman to talk about this, right?
Sometime in the future, yes, I am.
This is just remarkable. You know, by the time she gets on Letterman, she might have 15
minutes. Oh, at least.
I think I might just retire from golf for a while and just relax.
Well, where can you go from here? It's going to be every time you fall into par three and don't make all in one, it's a disappointment.
I'll take up tennis.
I don't know what clubs she owns, John, but if I were the manufacturer, I would have this woman on a national commercial now.
I think that's an endorsement. You lose your amateur status, but it might be worth it.
Well, I thank you guys.
All right, Jackie.
Like I said, it's been fun, and they've all been validated. They've been at different courses, and even today when I get another one out near the Hideaway.
You had one today.
I had one today at the Hideaway, and I was playing with people I've never played with before.
I love it. All right, Jackie, you enjoy the holiday with your family. I know we took you away from an event, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Jackie Gagne, who now has 20 official holes in one and 4 unofficial holes in one. John Ziegler in his entire life has 5, and I got to believe All five of those must have been lucky where his caddy dropped it in the hole no. and he wasn't looking.
No, George, they were real. Haven't had one in a while, but they were real. This is the most incredible story I've ever heard
It's got to be.
It's beyond bizarre.
It's got to be.
It's perfect
something.
For Coast to Coast.
It is perfect. And thanks for bringing her to us.
Hey, George, good to see you.
John Ziegler, he hosts those of you in Los Angeles, of course, the wonderful program on KFI. I'll be back in a moment as I will read the rendition of A Soldier Died Today. We'll talk with the author, Larry Vaincourt, wonderful man. And then open lines later on this half hour. We'll give you the numbers in just a moment. I'm George Norrie, this Memorial Day night, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You know, for years it has been my tradition to read on Memorial Day night, whenever I am on the air, A Soldier Died Today. And for so long, I didn't know who wrote this. Well, I found out several years ago. And had an opportunity just a few days ago to interview him. His name is Larry Vaincourt. Larry is going to be 83 years old in October. He was born in New York. He was in World War II. He has dual citizenship. He's a Canadian and he is a U.S. citizen. He is a photographer by trade. And he wrote this most incredible poem that I will read for you in a moment called A Soldier Died Today.
Well, I did it in 87. As a matter of fact, I was rather odd. I was just out the door on my way down to the newspaper office where I was to drop off my column, and I saw a neighbor of mine walking down the street, a veteran like myself, a guy about my age. And he's a rather quite ordinary chap, you know. Mentioned he was on his way down to the Legion. And I started off up to the newspaper office, which is about a 45-minute drive away. And as I drove along, I had a small recorder with me, and the poem just started coming into my mind. By the time I got up to the office, I had it three quarters on tape, and I thought, didn't think much of it. I used it for our November issue and thought no more of it for a couple of years, and it started turning up. Various newspapers contacted me and asked me for permission to print it. And then I believe your program was what set the thing in motion, because I and my son got a tremendous amount of mail on it. As a matter of fact, I believe he said that he broke down his computer, yes, and there was a tremendous amount of attention to it. Was, you know, completely flabbergasted, the amount of attention I got. And it seems to have carried on over the years. I thought, you know, in 1 or 2 years, I'd hear no more of it. But every May and every November 11th, I seem to get, you know, a real flock of mail.
You can tell when we read it, can't you?
Yes. Oh, yes, I can.
Hey, Larry, what does the poem mean to you?
Well, it has come to mean, you know, as I said, I didn't really think too much of it at the time. I'm always writing poetry. I have been for years. And as I watched my friend walk down the street that day, the first few lines came to my mind, getting old and punchy. He was a rotund little man with a lot of his hair missing. And he spent a great deal of time at the Legion. And I just, you know, I wrote it half for him. And
Larry, we've got a lot of veterans who listen to this program, and we've got some soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan who listen to this program. I'd like to wrap this up with you by just having you say something to them.
Of course, if you would like my personal opinion, I think they're doing a wonderful job, but I don't feel they should be there at all. That is my opinion, and thank you for allowing me to voice it over the air.
A soldier died today. He was getting old and his hair was falling fast, and he sat around telling stories of the past, of a war that he had fought in and the deeds that he had done in his exploits with buddies. They were heroes, everyone. And though sometimes to his neighbors his tales became a joke, all his buddies listened, for they knew whereof he spoke. But we'll hear his tales no longer, for he has passed away, and the world's a little poorer, for a soldier died today. No, he won't be mourned by many, just his friends, children, and wife, for he lived a very quiet sort of ordinary life. He held a job and raised a family, quietly going on his way, and the world won't note his passing, though a soldier died today. When politicians leave this earth, their bodies lie in state, while thousands note their passing and proclaim that they were great. Papers tell of their life stories from the time that they were young, but the passing of a soldier goes unnoticed and unsung. Is the greatest contribution to the welfare of our land some jerk who breaks his promises and cons his fellow man? Or the ordinary fellow who, in times of war and strife, goes off to serve his country and offer up his life? The politician's stipend and the style in which he lives are sometimes disproportionate to the service that he gives, while the ordinary soldier, who offered up his all, is paid off with a medal and perhaps a pension, small. It's so easy to forget them, for it was so long ago that the husbands, sons, and fathers went to battle. But we know it was not the politicians with their compromise and ploys who won for us the freedom that this country now enjoys. Should you find yourself in danger with your enemies at hand, would you really want some cop-out politician with his waffling stand? Or would you want a soldier who has sworn to defend his home, his kin, and country, and would fight until the end? He was just a common soldier, and his ranks are growing thin. But his presence should remind us we may need his like again. For when countries are in conflict, then we find the soldier's part is to clean up all the troubles that the politicians start. If we cannot do him honor while he's here to receive the praise, then at least let's give him homage at the ending of his days. Perhaps a simple headline in the paper that might say, "Our country is in mourning, for a soldier died today." And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's have some open lines now. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Hello, where are you calling from?
This is Leah calling from La Honda, California.
Oh, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Well, I just knew I had to call tonight to tell you a little story. You were talking last week or so about finding a camera with film in it.
It was a real old story. But, yeah, there was a camera that was found that had some pictures taken
right.
of what was supposed to be the future or something like that.
Oh.
I think it turned out to be a promotion for a movie.
I see. Okay. Well, I thought it was a question about if you found a camera, would you develop the film that you found
in
the camera?
Yes.
Okay. So here's the story. I was working at a thrift store in Half Moon Bay, which is on the coast, about an hour south of San Francisco. And it was a volunteer job, and because I'm a photographer, they would ask me to look at the cameras and see if they had any value or if they were, you know, if they'd like to sell them.
Okay.
Or if I would like to have them, because some of them were so old that they weren't even really usable anymore. So I started a little collection of some of these old cameras, and after I had them in my office for a while, I decided, oh, I really don't need all these cameras. I'm going to give them to a friend of mine in Berkeley who collects a lot of old camera things because he's a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him all the cameras, and he said, oh, did you notice that this one camera still has film in it? And I hadn't even noticed, and I had had these cameras for about 5 years.
Okay.
So he took the film, and he shot off the last couple rolls, and he took the film, he had the film developed, and he called me up, and he said, where did you get this camera? And I said, I got them all at the thrift store, and I'm just giving them to you. He said, when I got the film developed, it was pictures of his family 25 years ago.
Oh, how weird is that?
I know.
Did he love it?
He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that I didn't take the pictures and that the camera, and the it's about an hour and a half drive from Berkeley to Half Moon Bay.
I wonder what the odds are of something like that happening.
Pretty slim, but it happened.
Thanks. Next up, east of the Rockies, you are on Coast to Coast.
Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good,
tonight?
Sir. Thanks.
I have to admit, I haven't been able to listen to the show here in recent days because I've been so busy with stuff on Deadline. I work in the newspaper business.
Ah, okay.
But I was just wondering if you had picked up on or covered at all this big groundswell Save the Jericho show campaign that's been going on.
No, I haven't touched that yet. And, of course, there is that campaign going on ever since CBS decided they didn't want the show anymore.
Right.
There's that huge cult following. I call it cult only because of its specialization.
And
they love this program. I don't think it's going to get it back on the air on that network, but you never know. Maybe someone else will decide to pick it up.
Well, it's been amazing to see the fan reaction to the cancellation. I mean, the voicemails at CBS have been flooded. They've been getting emails and letters. And then, of course, the most unique part about this has been the Nuts campaign, which, of course, at the season finale, they used the word nuts. Skeet Ulrich said it when he was asked to surrender the town of Jericho. And the fans have sent in to CBS offices, nuts by the ton. We're sending 4,000 plus pounds a day to the CBS offices in New York.
Whoa! And the crux of this was, of course, an atomic bomb goes off.
Right. It's a post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. Now tell me. It obviously didn't have the kind of ratings to keep going. Why do fans like the show so much?
Well, I'd have to answer that in two ways. I think number one, the old-fashioned Nielsen ratings, I don't think, gave the show its due because they had it up through new media on the Internet where people could watch it on CBS and on demand and download it to iPods. And I don't believe Nielsen's are accurately counting those of us like myself whose schedule demanded that I use my DVR to record the show and watch it later.
So you think there were more people watching.
The fan base was much larger than what they gave it credit for. But the appeal of this show, I mean, has been, at least for me, and I know I've seen on message boards of the fans that are in this movement, just having such a gripping storyline and good scripted television seems to be harder and harder to come by these days. You get so much more reality television.
Yeah, well, it's reality, you know, because it's cheaper, it's faster, and you're right. It is very difficult to find a lot of quality programming. They're out there, Lost, 24, but there's not a lot of them. There's a lot of reality shows because of the reasons I just gave. Yes, I've been getting tons of emails from people who love the Jericho show. And as a matter of fact, they've put Coast to Coast's phone numbers up on some blogs to get people to call in. And so I guess it's starting. Let's go to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes. Well, I was just wondering, I heard another talk show, they mentioned about receding glaciers in Switzerland that were uncovering things like ancient human, there was a mine that had been uncovered, like that had been covered up for thousands of years.
There's lots of things hidden under ice.
And I just wondered if you heard any more about that story. Maybe they'll uncover some Neanderthals.
Well, I'll tell you what. Toward the end of this week, Glenn Kimball is going to be our guest. And those are some of the things we're going to talk with Glenn about ancient discoveries. So make sure you're listening to that part of Coast to Coast. I believe Glenn is on Thursday. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks.
Hey, my name is Paul. I was doing some remodeling of a church. I'm not going to say where. And have you ever been in a big city where those elevators go up to street level?
Where the elevators go up to street
okay,
level?
Okay, I'm sorry. It's kind of hard to explain. They're like freight elevators, and all of a sudden, like, doors will open up, and then people will come up, and they'll be on the sidewalk.
Yeah, like, okay, yeah. Yeah, they're like construction freight elevators.
Yeah,
things
yeah,
like
yeah.
That. Okay.
So I was in a basement waterproofing it. And all of a sudden, I heard that noise. And we had always joked around because we always called it the trap door, just the people who worked down there. we couldn't see any control for it or anything. So we just joked around and called it the trap door. So all of a sudden, it starts opening. So we all look at it, and then I'm being honest here. A reptilian is standing there. And I never believed in it. I love Ghost to Ghost because I work overnight. But yeah. I always laughed. I always thought it was hilarious when people would talk about these, you know, lizard aliens. And there was one standing right in front of me.
Standing right there, staring you in the eyes. What did you do?
I ran and I hid under the AC. I ran to the HVAC room.
Did he chase you?
Laid under the AC.
Did he come after you?
Nope.
You sure it wasn't a guy in some reptilian costume? I always ask that first.
You know what, George? I was not going to go up to him and be like, how you doing? Are you a real alien?
Yeah.
No, I booked it. What? I saw him. I ran. I don't even know if he saw me. All I know is I ran and hid under the AC.
And
I didn't come out until 8 a.m. the next morning.
And hopefully he was gone.
I didn't see him, but I never went back to that particular church.
He was up on the fourth floor. Waiting. All right, thanks. A reptilian comes down the elevator. International Line, where are you calling from? Hi there.
I'm calling from just north of Toronto, Newmarket, Ontario. My name's Tony. George, I have an incredible quick story to tell you.
Sure,
Memorial
Tony.
Day story.
Okay.
Saturday morning, I'm minding my own business. The phone rings. My cousins in Europe call me. She's a university student. Her grandma's digging in the garden, and what does she dig up? Some dog tags from an American soldier from World War II.
Oh.
So I'm a little emotional here. You have to bear with me.
That's okay.
So what happens is she wrote to some government agency, and they forwarded some information to her on the last known address, which was in San Francisco. And he had one son, and the son was born in 1943. So we were putting two and two together that the son was conceived just before he shipped out.
Uh-huh.
So what happened was we spent all day Sunday calling lots of people all over the states, and by fluke, we were able to track down his wife in Oregon. I won't mention her name. And she told us the story, and it was unbelievable. The son, who was born in 1943, passed away 2 years ago, and his father was killed by a sniper in Italy.
Oh, my.
And we're just exchanging names now to forward those two dog tags.
Good for you.
And it was just unbelievable that this happened.
What was the reaction when you called her?
Well, here's what happened. We were able to track down an apartment that they were at a year ago. And by fluke, I found out it was an apartment building, and I was able to get about 8 listings. I just picked one of the names, and the phone answered, and it was a very elderly woman. She was so nice. And she knew right away who it was, but she was suspicious of me, so she wouldn't tell me anything. She goes, well, give me your contact information.
Right. You can't blame her.
People.
Yeah.
And what had happened, 10 minutes later, the phone rang from Oregon, and she was just ecstatic. The mother is still alive. She's in her 80s. But the wife said that she has the shadow box of her, I guess, her father-in-law with the Purple Heart. And can I mention his name?
You may mention his name. He deserves it.
His name was Herschel Holder, and the son was Herschel Jr. Lee Holder. And he was killed by a sniper in it's near Casino, Monte Casino, where the famous monastery was.
Well, so fitting then with a soldier died today. Thank you so much for that, and good work. Good work. Well, that just wraps up our first hour with our Memorial Day tribute. And again, to all you soldiers out there and family members of deceased soldiers, thank you on behalf of everyone associated with and who listens to Coast AM. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with a very special guest with High Adventure. Stay tuned and don't touch that dial.